531.
Now, the situation with community cases in Fiji continues to worsen as the numbers of those with COVID-19 daily continues to climb, especially over the weekend. And we are going to cross now to Fiji to speak with journalist Lide Morvono, freelance journalist whose work has featured on the ABC Australia, The Guardian, Al Jazeera, Radio New Zealand, SBS, News Talk ZB, Agence France Press, also owns her own company, Today Media Fiji. She is on the line with us now. Lide Morvono. Bulavinaka, Lide, and thank you so much for making time to have a chat with us this morning.
Bulavinaka. Now,
how are things there? Here in New Zealand, when we do have these cases, we have daily press conferences every day where the ministry gives us numbers and how things are going. Are you getting regular reports from the government or at least the Ministry of Health there?
No, sadly, we don't get the regular reports. Last night, we had the Permanent Secretary for Health update us via Zoom. He is, of course, in quarantine as well because his team, the incident management team, now have cases as well. In fact, they're one of a growing cluster as well. But anyway, he gave his update via Zoom from home, and that was the first time in 9 days. So it's not an ideal situation. They've gone longer than that even to not update us. Well, not face-to-face anyway. We don't get to see him or the minister or the prime minister for that matter. And so what that means is we get to only hear, we read it online. We read our case counts online. Occasionally, they will post directly onto their Facebook page. Sometimes they'll send it to the media beforehand. So it hasn't been consistent, unfortunately.
It has been haphazard. And it is concerning to hear that the team looking after the COVID-19 has got COVID-19 itself. Would they not have been some of the first people to get the vaccination?
They did, but see, they received their first dose, and you need the second dose in order to get maximum coverage. And they were scheduled to get their second dose in the next couple of weeks.
So, with the briefing that was given on Zoom last night, what were the numbers like?
Okay, so before last night, we were at 604 cases. Last night, they reported another 35, and because 15 patients had recovered, the total case count now is 624. We have had 810 cases in the past 2 months alone, just in this the Delta variant. So Delta is what the WHO now encourages us to call this variant that was first found in India, which is the one that's moving very quickly through Fiji. It's a lot more infectious and therefore quite dangerous. So we've had 810 cases since April. We have had 4 deaths in total, 2 from this outbreak alone. However, we've had 3 deaths at the Colonial War Memorial Hospital in the past 1 week. But these were patients who, although they tested positive for COVID-19, they had other serious illnesses as well. So the government is not identifying them as COVID-19 deaths.
Yeah, that's a complicated issue in itself, saying that these people had other issues, other health issues. I mean, in most countries, they would be counted as COVID-19 deaths. So it's interesting. I'm wondering whether they're trying to put a positive spin on this.
And you know what? That is a very valid thing to wonder about, because there's been a lot of that lately, a lot of behavior on the part of the government that makes us question a lot of things. For example, we get our updates very late at night. The latest was at midnight one night. The Prime Minister began his address at midnight and finished, at about 12:30, close to 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's a common occurrence now for them to not begin their press conferences until about 9:10. When we get lucky, it will be around 6:30, 7:30. And so just that, scheduling communications initiatives late at night when people would have gone to sleep, when it's a lot harder for people to digest and process information, particularly when you're dealing with, a public health campaign, when you're trying to get people to behave in ways that reduce risk to themselves and to the communities that we live in. And so, yes, you're not alone in wondering if a lot of what they're doing is trying to put a positive spin on the situation. Like, for example, we will get a case count of, say, 25 to 30 cases in the early afternoon, and then late at night is a lot more, but then very first thing in the morning is another 20 or 30 or so. And so you wonder sometimes if they're breaking up the case count. So it sounds lighter, but that is something that we're all just going to have to form our own opinions about. But yes, we've had 3 cases of people who have died at the Colonial War Memorial Hospital, which is currently the fastest growing cluster. And CWM, as some people might know, is our largest hospital in the country. It serves about 300,000 people in the Central Eastern Division.
Now, give us some idea of the picture of where these outbreaks are now. Are they located out the island throughout Vitu Levu, or are they just confined to sort of like the Suva area?
Okay, so PJ, as you well know, you've been here very many times. There are 300 or so islands, but only up till about I think between 20 to 30 are inhabited. But the main centres are based in Viti Levu, Vanu Levu, the Lome Viti Islands, Tavuni, Kandavu, and Lau, etc. The breach at the protocol occurred in Mandi, our gateway town where the international airport is located. And so at first, the infection, the outbreak centered around the Western Division. And so they had lockdowns. The main hospital in the Western Division, Lautroka, had 3 cases and 1 death. They had a hard lockdown too. After 24 days, they came out of that relatively well, no more infections. But the super spreader event in Lautoka, the funeral that pushed a lot of the cases traveling down to the Central Eastern Division, brought the cases further out this way. Yeah? And so now most of the cases are here in the Central Eastern Division. So the area stands from Lami town, the town just before the capital Suva, all the way to Nosori, another gateway town where a small international airport is located. And that area alone has about 300,000 people. And so most of the cases have been from around here. Now, the clusters that are fastest growing is the Ministry of Health cluster, and that includes the Ministry of Health, the incident management team at the headquarters in Denham House, the Colonial War Memorial Hospital, and the main COVID-19 incident management team warehouse where all of our supplies that are being used in the response is located. Another very fast growing cluster is the military forces. So it's both to the army base in at the Queen Elizabeth Barracks and also at the Naval Division, which is based in the city. And so we have basically our frontliners are our fastest growing clusters.
Wow, that is of some concern. Now, in Samoa, I know that when they went to lockdown, they stopped travel between the islands because the concern now is that it could spread to Vanua Levu and the other islands. Is such a restriction being imposed there?
Yes, absolutely. Early on in the outbreak, they discontinued travel outside of Viti Levu. People can come in now. They can register. They wish to travel in from the outer islands, particularly those who might have gone away for work before this whole situation began 2 months ago. So around about the same time, they stopped that travel in and out of the country. They also did the same for Vieta Island, Fiji.
Now, the health system sounds like it is no longer able to cope with any more numbers going being admitted, and people are being asked to isolate themselves at home. The hope is that that's going to work because of the way that we live as communities. It's the same throughout the Pacific. We tend to be family people, and at the best of times, we don't trust the advice of the professionals, and we make up our own theories about these things. How much of an issue is that with regards to this?
Well, you know what? The first time around in March of 2020, when the pandemic occurred here, the government strategy then was very different from now. We had lockdowns straight away. We had deterrent, as in punishment, police charges that were attached to the COVID protocols that were put out by the government. And so people had very little choice. And I think with the onset of fear and, you know, the pandemic being new, people adhered almost right away. You still had a lot of breach of curfews, for example. And so the military and the police were very swift in their response to that. This time around, the strategy has been very different. They haven't done the go hard and go early strategy that, you know, is now being recognized through research as being the most effective way to combat the pandemic. And so, with the inconsistency in their communication style, as well as communication messaging, as well as even the tone, I'll go so far as to say, there hasn't been as quick an uptake on community behavior to the messaging that we saw the first time around. For example, the funerals that continued to happen and became super spreader events, people were told only 20 people at funerals when the outbreak occurred, and then that only came down to 10 when the funerals were recognized as super spreader events. But you know, there weren't punishments attached to a non-compliance of that particular strategy, for example. So one thing that critics of the government have put out and questioned is, how is it that when you understand how, you know, the characteristics of our community, particularly in Pacific Island societies where we're very communal and a lot of us live in extended setups, and where traditional events and rituals you know, are inherent to who we are, that there weren't more deterrence attached to these protocols to ensure compliance. But yet, on the one hand, we hear from the government that funerals and social events that continue to take place in traditional settings in some places, but then we also hear from other places in the country where traditional communities, where villages are instituting their own COVID protocols, where they're identifying their own village policemen type people who patrol in the night and make sure there's no COVID drinking outside of your bubble and things like that. But yes, it's definitely a factor that needed to be considered and maybe featured a lot more in the way this public health campaign has been run.
Now, here in New Zealand, people who felt, who wanted to be sure they didn't have COVID-19, they were able to go to our testing stations to test themselves. How well is the testing regime there?
I think that is one area that we can speak off with some excitement, or rather with some positivity. We had very early in this particular outbreak a lot of technical support from, you know, Australia, New Zealand, the European Union especially, India even, in the form of testing machines and testing support. Australia, for example, has been a very strong and active partner of the Ministry of Health, particularly in terms of genomic sequencing testing to see if a variant that's spreading all across the country is the same one, and trying to track the outbreak to just understand if it's from that one outbreak in Nandi in mid-April. So we've had a lot of support. We've had a lot of extra machines come in. At the start, we only had the Fiji CDC and the three major hospitals here in Suva, in the west, and in the north. be given testing capabilities. But now we have a lot more testing centers. We even have a private chain of medical facilities in the Western Division that has the ability to test. And the screening centers all around the country, which coincidentally will get discontinued as of today, made it possible for people to access these places. So we also had mobile testing and screening teams who went around the neighborhoods where the clusters were forming to ensure people could get swabbed and tested. As of yesterday, the government secretary has announced that they will now discontinue the mobile or rather the temporary testing initiatives which they had set up only a couple of weeks, 3 weeks ago, because now those mobile teams need to be part of the response in the public health facilities so that, as the government secretary put it, so that they prepare themselves for the increase in cases and the increase in severe cases that they're now expecting. Whether or not people can just turn up at a public health facility without any symptoms, without any history or connection to known cases and say, can I be tested, please? As far as I know, that is not something that is available to us. You get tested if you turn up with symptoms or with some proof or with an explanation that you were in close proximity to a positive person.
And finally, I guess one of the main weapons that the government has to bring this under control is vaccination. How is the vaccination rollout going?
That is even better news, or that is even a better conversation to talk about. The vaccination rollout program has been wonderful. We've had the bulk of our vaccines come in from the COVAX facility, with the backing of the European Union, of course. We've had a lot of vaccines, maybe even more than the COVAX facility, come in from the Australian government, and of course also from the New Zealand government and the government of India. The Americans had come late to the party and offered some after they managed to get the level of vaccination they wanted in their own country before they started to export their vaccines as well. But in total, the number of vaccines, the number of doses pledged to Fiji has exceeded the number of qualified populations. And it's given the government the ability to plan to vaccinate those people who hit 18 years of age later in the year. So far, we are on track to meet early COVAX targets to vaccinate at least 30% of our qualified population by the end of June. As of yesterday, the first dose of the vaccines were given to 220,000 people. The government has identified that the number of people who qualify and should get the vaccine in order for the country to achieve herd immunity is 650,000 people. So that's 220,000 people who have received their first dose, and if I'm not mistaken, close to 10,000 who have received their second dose. There's been a little bit of a delay because of the way that the frontliners are getting infected. But otherwise, for all intents and purposes, the vaccination rollout team, which is headed by Dr. Rachel Devi, has been moving very quickly, and they've achieved a lot of success in terms of getting people to agree to get vaccinated and inch that much faster towards herd immunity.
Wow. That does sound like good news indeed. And finally, have you got your vaccination yet, or are you in the queue at the moment?
Yes, I received my first dose a week after this particular outbreak began. One of the things that they did early on in this particular outbreak is they identified, because for the first 4 months of the year, they were working on getting all of the frontliners. So military, police, especially the medical staff, the people that worked in tourism. And then when they looked at the way this outbreak traveled through Fiji in that first to second week alone, they realized they needed to strategize around the peripheries of the frontline. And so that included the media, and it included government leaders and civil servants. So we got called in as well to get our vaccines. And on track to to get. I'm queuing up to get my second dose around the third week of June. So I'm very excited about that because I've been observing positive protocols and basically staying within my house for the past 8 weeks.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Lide Movono, freelance journalist. Always a pleasure. And what valuable information you've given us this morning. And some hope with hearing that vaccinations are happening well and lockdown seems to be working as well.
And I'm always happy to be speaking to our Pacifica community. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Early Edition with Etse. That was Lide Movono, freelance journalist, giving us a full picture of what is happening on the ground with regards to COVID-19 community transmission in Fiji.